is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Good evening and welcome to a WATD Political Forum. I'm Christine James, your moderator here in studio, the big downstairs studio, asking questions along with Monday Night Talk Show host and reporter Kevin Tachi, WATD's Charles Mathewson, and Plymouth correspondent Bobby Clark. The race tonight is for Plymouth Selectman. Two open seats on the board. Six candidates are running. Five are here in studio. Actually, we're still waiting for Craig Brenner, but we've got Betty Cavaco, Clark Corson, Mark Garrett, and incumbent John Mahoney. Paul McAuliffe had a planning board meeting tonight, so I gave him a pass. I said if he wanted to send in a statement, I would read it, which I will do. The election in Plymouth is May 20th. Our format is simple. If you're a regular listener, you know we always ask the candidates to have prepared opening and closing statements ready. The opening, 2 minutes, closing no longer than 1 minute, please. Amy Leonard is timing this tonight, as you can see with our red, green, and yellow sheets there on the corner. As I tell people, remember this from kindergarten, green means go, yellow means 10 seconds, even though this is Massachusetts, and red means stop. If you talk over that, you get a warning, then you get the bell, and I will just cut you off. Okay, so get to the point. This is a good forum. This is live right now. This will be up on our website tomorrow. We'll also have selected cuts of this during Morning Drive News tomorrow. Lightning round, that's the best part. The answers are either yes or no, and one or two sentences tops. We find that most people running for office have problems with this. That's why we'll probably enjoy this the most. And again, it's yes or no, no long explanation, no soliloquy, no et cetera, et cetera. It's yes or no or 1 or 2 minutes. We just chose opening and closing order out of the official WATD newsroom koozie. They were all witnesses to this, so we know the order of candidates. And it will be Mark Garrett, then Clark Corson, Betty Cavaco, Craig Brenner, if he appears here on time, Paul McAuliffe, who I will write a statement for, and then John Mahoney. That order gets reversed at the end with our closing statements. So good evening, and let's get started, and let's begin with an opening statement now from Mark Garrett.
Thank you, Christine. Planning, analysis, and solution-based outcomes, the themes of Mark Garrett's years of public service to Plymouth and my run for selectman. Plymouth's rapid growth has forced the Board of Selectmen to have the temperament and the thoughtfulness to evaluate very complex taxpayer issues and become proactive in approaching our future by lessening the residential tax burden to the greatest extent possible, maximizing our public open space investments through ecotourism while protecting the environment and being disciplined to maintain some tax-generating land stocks, developing a scaled townwide program to pay off the sewer reconstruction while considering every option to reduce its financial impact, capitalizing on the 400th as a national celebration and also our other townwide assets like the harbor, improving public infrastructure, identifying future townwide wastewater needs, incentivizing private open space to maintain their tax-generating status while also protecting the environment, working to improve the collective bargaining process and offsetting the plant closure impacts through well-thought-out on- and off-site land uses to include a potential repurposing of the site while investigating our other clean energy technologies like tidal energy generation or high-capacity battery storage. Plymouth must also remain solvent enough to deal with ongoing operational and maintenance issues, provide fair labor compensation, and for any unanticipated emergencies that may arise. In short, Plymouth must strive toward economic sustainability. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was Mark Garrett. Now let's go to our opening statement with Clark Corson.
Thank you, Christine. Only 122 persons other than town officials took enough interest to appear at this spring's 15 precinct caucuses. In America's hometown of approximately 60,000 people, this is an unfortunate travesty. Is this apathy, being outright lazy, or is it frustration that, quote, my vote won't matter one way or the other, so why bother? It astounds me that our forefathers came to America to escape political and religious oppression, and yet so many Plymouthians aren't motivated to exercise their right to vote, and in this case, vote their pocketbook. At the recent spring town meeting, it took the town meeting members, several of whom are town employees, just 40 minutes to approve a $211.8 million budget, yet 2 days to argue over less important items. Your 2017 property tax rate at $16.58 per thousand assessed value will reflect a $1.14 increase in 2018 to $17.72, a one-year increase of 7%. In the last 10 years, property taxes in Plymouth have increased 75.6%. Every $1 million on the expense side of the budget is reflected by a 10-cent increase in your tax rate. Has your income increased at this meteoric pace? At this rate, in 2020, your tax rate will be $20 per thousand valuation. Do you believe your Board of Selectmen actually have your pocketbook in mind when they review and recommend the budget? I don't. Theirs is the same old promise, year after year, not to raise taxes. Our problem in Plymouth isn't revenue. Our problem is wasteful spending. Are you happy with your selectmen? Well, I'm not. These are but a few reasons why I'm asking your support. It's time for a change. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement from Clark Corson. Now we're going to go to Betty Cavaco.
Thank you, Christine. Hello, my name is Betty Cavaco. Plymouth has many important issues facing us. We still have a serious drug epidemic. How will we pay for the sewer replacement? The ever-increasing town spending, our ever-increasing taxes, the state of our roads, the exit of Pilgrim Station, and the list goes on. In talking with many residents that make up our town, I have developed a platform that I believe can guide us into the future. First, the selectmen must set a budget and require town government to live within that budget, just like we must do. And as a member of the Advisory and Finance Committee, I know where changes can be made. Secondly, the sewer repair issue. I propose we act to gather and institute new non-tax revenue streams to service that debt. And third, Plymouth has enough minimum wage paying jobs. We must bring light industrial commercial development that create full-time good paying jobs with benefits for the residents of Plymouth. Finally, we must engage our youth. Children are our future, and as responsible parents and adults of this community, I feel we must pave a successful path for them. And I have the proven track record to do just that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was Betty Cavaco. Now, next in the lineup here, we had Craig Brenner. I'm not sure if he's wandering in the other part of the building. Kevin Tachi just went to find him. So I'm going to read the opening statement that Paul McAuliffe sent in for tonight. So I will read this. He says, I, of course, but I'm reading this for Paul. As you may already know, my name is Paul McAuliffe, and I'm running for a seat on the Plymouth Board of Selectmen. Please consider voting for me. I've been a member of the Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce since 2000, serving as an ambassador on the Economic Development Committee and the Energy Committee, to name a few. In addition, I have 17 years on the Plymouth Planning Board and as chair for 2 years. I currently serve on the Community Preservation Committee as well as the Building Committee. I was a town meeting member for 4 years and on the Cedarville Steering Committee, which I also chaired. Through these years of dedicated service to the town of Plymouth, I've always been a strong supporter of common sense as it relates to the taxpayer and economic development, affordable housing, alternative energy, and the permitting process. I will work in the best interests of the town of Plymouth and for you. And again, that was the opening statement from Paul McAuliffe. Now, let's go to John Mahoney, your opening statement.
Christine, Kevin, it's always good to see you. Unfortunately, we only see each other every 3 years, so but I wish it was more often. So good evening, everyone. I want to thank WATD for hosting this forum. My name is John Mahoney, and I've had the honor of being involved in Plymouth Municipal Government for a little over the last 10 years. I was first elected to town meeting member, part of the legislative body from Precinct 3. I was able to get appointed to the Finance and Advisory Board, and obviously the last 9 as a member of your Plymouth Board of Selectmen. I've been a resident of the town for almost 20 years, and my son Christian is in the 5th grade at Cold Spring Elementary. I'm running for another term in the Plymouth Board of Selectmen because I know that my experience and outside-the-box thinking will continue to be an asset to the community. Too often it is said that government needs to run like a business. I hear it a lot. I don't see any specific examples of it. Nobody actually does it. We have to break the perpetual cycle of raising taxes and layering debt on the next generation. I'm a candidate who makes principled, conservative financial decisions that always thinks long-term. This town has a rare opportunity over the next 5 to 8 years to set the next couple of generations up for success and leave a lasting legacy of affordable, quality living regardless of one's demographic. Plymouth is a unique place with unique challenges. On May 20th, I'm asking for your consideration for one of your 2 votes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was John Mahoney, candidate for selectman, his opening statement. We're going to go to questions now. And let's begin with, of course, Kevin Tanchi, Monday Night Talk Show host.
Thank you, Christine. Talk around town is that there is a movement to replace incumbent selectmen with candidates who live in the Pine Hills area of town. Do you subscribe to this theory, and is there an actual divide in the town? If so, why?
Who do you want to start with?
We'll start with Clark.
Thank you. I live in the Pine Hills.
But if I lived in Precinct 3, would that matter? Your selectmen serve this town independent of geography. There are 15 precincts represented by nine town meeting members. Your five selectmen serve the town as a whole. It is preposterous to think that because there is one selectman who presently lives in Pine Hills, that another person living in Pine Hills would not have the best interest of all of Plymouth at heart. Thank you.
Okay. Same question. You want to go to
Mr. Mahoney.
John Mahoney?
I'll go around that one.
So, over the years, I've heard people reference the fact that maybe prior selectmen have had, given certain villages of areas of the community preferential treatment, over others. I don't do that. Everything I try to do is to try to make objective, long-term decisions that are in the best financial interests of the community. At the end of the day, this residential development of the Pine Hills, the individuals, they go out and vote. And if the other 14 precincts don't want to come out and vote, they have nobody to blame but themselves.
Board of Selectmen represents the entire town, regardless of where they live. I live in West Plymouth. My interests extend to Cedarville, to North Plymouth, through Chiltonville, and into the Pine Hills. John's right. I don't think the Pine Hills is trying to take over the town. I think the Pine Hills is an astute community who puts up candidates at times, studies the issues, and goes out and votes. And they are only one precinct. They are approximately 3,200 voters, just like every other precinct has approximately 3,200 voters. And if the other precincts, and people have said this to me, well, the Pine Hills is taking over. No, they're not. You're giving it. You're allowing them the opportunity to influence the elections by coming out and speaking their mind. They participate, and I applaud them for that.
Thank you. That was Mark Garrett. Same question. You want to go to Betty Cavaco?
Although what you said is certainly the undertone that Pine Hills is trying to take over, I don't think it matters where you live. A candidate that truly loves this community and loves this town really has to represent everybody in the town. So the rumors are out there, like Mark said, they're organized. They got out, they vote, they did what they intended to do, and I applaud them as well. And every other precinct should take notice and do the same thing.
I'm going to ask a quick follow-up, but it's just going to be a yes or no answer, okay? Would you ever support a town charter change that would limit the number of people elected from a particular precinct to sit on any board or commission? Betty?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Okay. Go to Bobby Clark. Questions for the Plymouth candidates?
Yes. Town meeting passed a budget of over $225 million. What of that amount do you consider wasteful spending? And what changes would you make, if any, to reduce taxes?
Let's start with Betty on this one.
Well, as part of the Advisory and Finance Committee, I see where a lot of the details are. And it's not necessarily the budget that we have the problem with, it's the revenue that we are trying to bring in to offset that budget, and we fail at that. So one of the suggestions that the Finance Committee had was to bring in grant writers. Many towns have them. Our town does not. Our own assistant town manager has a grant writer from the town that he was in, and they bring in over $7 million a year for the town of Plymouth, or the town of Worcester, I believe he was in. So although we have a very large town and it's growing, so it's not going to get smaller, I believe that our focus is to offset that budget by bringing in more revenue streams, non-taxable revenue streams, to do so.
Okay, let's go to Mark Garrett. Same question.
I believe that there is
a lot of overlap in responsibilities with services provided in this town. And I think that, you know, I work in a number of towns throughout Massachusetts, and some are worse than us and some are better than us. And the ones that are better than us seem to have a more streamlined approach to providing services to the community. Now, I'm not suggesting we fire people. I'm not suggesting that. But I think we have to look at reducing overlap through attrition as our employees or our public employees start to retire or continue to retire. We have to look at combining forces. And I understand there's the town side and the school side, but there are duplicate services being provided, and there are places where that may be able to be reduced.
Okay. Let's go to John Mahoney. Same question.
Christine, 80% of the budget is human resources. If you want to cut back, you have to lay people off. I have people constantly calling me looking for more bodies because they don't get enough, whether it's police, fire, DPW, etc. Okay? This past town meeting might have been historical because, in my opinion, we passed two articles for roads that are probably the two best at roads articles in the community's history, or especially since the state legislature passed the auto excise tax. Over $8 million a year from the auto excise tax, in theory for roads, not one penny is earmarked for roads. You show up in 2017, you have $135 million worth of debt. We're implementing a policy. We're only going to allow the excise contribution in the general fund to grow at 1.25% a year. On the last 20 years, it's grown by 3% on average. We're going to take the differential, put that into its own road fund, and give that to the DPW director annually. So in conjunction with your Chapter 90 money, he can go out and start to attack that debt.
Thank you, John. Good question. Clark Corson.
Thank you. I disagree with Betty. I don't think our problem is a lack of revenue. I think it's overspending in foolish areas. And I would cite the Sims House at $4.5 million, $3.1 million for a synthetic turf field, a multipurpose field at Plymouth South High School so the kids can play baseball without waiting for the snow to melt. We have an unfunded other public employee benefit crisis, which people don't seem to want to talk about. So I think that instead of drawing from the general fund, a reasonable approach would be to have earmarked funding or designated funding for special projects, be it a mitigation fund for the energy situation, roads and highways, safety on our streets, meaning lighting, widening, lining, et cetera. So I don't think our problem is one of revenue. I think it's one of spending.
Thank you. That was Clark Corson. Now let's go to Charles Mathewson. Questions for the candidates.
I have an individual question for each of you, and in ballot order. John Mahoney, the night of the League of Women Voters debate, I saw John Scaglarini holding a sign outside Town Hall. It did not have your name on it. Many of the people who showed up for him at selectmen's meetings were not newcomers. You've alienated a lot of Plymouth stalwarts over your position with the Skag Beach lease. I'm sure you're aware of that, and that was a conscious decision.
That wasn't a conscious decision.
To alienate people, no? That happened. Well, what do you have
you're
to say?
You're telling me I made a conscious decision to alienate people? I didn't do that. This falls under the question of, there was an earlier question from Mr. Kevin with respect to the Pine Hills taking over the town. I make objective decisions in the best long-term interest of the community. You have an individual who's gotten preferential treatment out there politically for over two decades. You have an average rent of $525 a month. The lease says that he's only supposed to be out there seasonally. He's out there year-round. We've lost over $10,000 in legal fees, interest, and the town staff running around chasing him. This is a case of political preferential treatment. Okay? Now, you're talking about the Pine Hills. This is a townie versus non-townie thing. I'm not playing that game. And you have a treasurer's department that sees over 17,000 to 18,000 predominantly residential people. Everybody is treated the same, independent of race, religion, age, gender, veteran status, etc. There's one set of rules for those people. I'm not creating a second set of rules.
Okay. Any follow-up question to that, Charlie?
Thank you for stating your position, John. Mark, We know you as a planner, a radical realist. You've criticized the sewer project, the replacement of Plymouth South High School as examples of lack of planning. What needs better planning now and over the next 3 years so that we won't be in this position in the future?
Charlie, infrastructure, infrastructure, infrastructure. Nationally, we ignore our infrastructure. Plymouth is a proclaims itself to be a tourist town. We have a celebration coming up in 3 years, plus or minus. We do not take care of our infrastructure. We can't take care of our tourist infrastructure. We can't take care of our residential infrastructure. We have got to be proactive about what we do about repairs, whether it's roads, whether it's trails. Plymouth has grown 400% in 60 years, and most of those people have not come from the downtown or North Plymouth. They've come from Boston, Philadelphia, New York. They have a lifestyle where if they forget a quart of milk, they want to go to the corner store to get one safely. Infrastructure, infrastructure, infrastructure.
Thank you. Betty Kubako, of anyone in the room, you're the closest neighbor to the nuclear power plant. You know its operations best. What are the best options for reuse?
Well, I mean, honestly, when the power plant came to town, it was supposed to have Pilgrim 2. That would have been something that would have been really beneficial to our town. I can see a gas-fired generator plant. I know that the Green Line is going to be coming in through there. So these are things that, you know, we really have to consider. Now, I agree that we could do something light industrial commercial on the actual property that Pilgrim Station sits. For the 1,500 acres that everybody seems to talk about, I'm really not crazy about any idea of developing that land. And quite frankly, you know, everybody talks about the 1,500 acres, the 1,500 acres. I like to deal in reality. And the reality I know is we can put away the unicorns and rainbows for a little while because I don't think the town or anyone else is going to get the opportunity to get that property. I think Entergy will make some kind of business decision.
Your time's up. Okay. Do you want to ask a follow-up question, Charlie?
No, fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you brought up the 1,500 acres because that was one of my questions.
I have one candidate left.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right. I'll get to
Mr. You know, Clark's new to the room, but
thank you.
We have to treat him like
just,
everyone else.
I was just chomping at the bit to get into that.
Yeah,
go right ahead.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Clark, your signs say axe the tax. Which tax would you axe, and what would you remove from the budget to do it?
I would ax the property tax primarily. That seems to be the tax which spreads townwide and affects everyone, young, poor, and old. I would do that in this order, Charlie. Department heads make recommendations to the town manager and the FIN committee, the finance committee, and they in turn make recommendations to the Board of Selectmen. If I were on the Board of Selectmen, I would let my position be known up front that there is going to be zero-based budgeting in every single department. Now, I'm not talking about paper towels and toilet paper, but I'm talking about capital expenditures, equipment expenditures, and personnel hires. I would institute a hiring freeze. Let the town digest what they have, sit back, analyze everything for maybe a year or two, and freeze the tax. I would ask for a moratorium on any property tax increases. Thank you.
So your sign should say free toilet paper and paper towels, is that right?
If there were enough space on the sign, I probably would.
Okay.
Any follow-up for that?
That's it.
Thank okay. You. Now I want to go back to that 1,500 acres. I know that that's an issue that has come up in town with what's going to happen with that property. So maybe people have an idea, maybe they don't have an idea. Tell me what you think should be done with that 1,500 acres. Let's start with you, Mark Garrett.
As I have said right along, the 1,500 acres is a large parcel of land, and it should be looked at in a very creative, analytical way, because I don't think there's any one land use or resource use that's going to work out there. My business is environmental consulting. People come to me all the time and tell me, I've got the perfect piece of land. There's a piece of land that hasn't been built on in 2017. It's not a perfect piece of land. And I think that that land has issue, may have some issues that we don't see. None of us see. Even walking on the trails, you don't see. I think somebody has to start in analyzing it, and I think the town should be approaching some private entities that might want to go there. The site east of Route 3A is an energy niche use. You have a distribution system that's huge.
Sorry, you're out of time. Remember, if, during this forum, if there's a question that you don't feel that you had enough time to get your thoughts in, you can use part of that minute at the end if you want to put that in as well. Let's go to the same 1,500-acre question. John Mahoney, what do you think, 1,500 acres?
Well, obviously, the property rights don't reside with the community. So in a perfect world, we would get a bite at this apple, and the town of Plymouth would have the ability, and hopefully the price is right, take an article to town meeting. Town meeting would see the wisdom of acquiring the property, and the property comes underneath the town umbrella. We have had generic conversations as a board. You want to get control of the property and come up with a long-term visionary proposal through planning. And we've talked about, you know, potential X amount of acres for open space, potential X amount of acres for an industrial park. I've been assured by one of the best in the business that it could be award-winning. And then we have also talked about a residential component. But, you know, going back to the unicorn statement, that, you know, that's the elephant in the room or the unicorn in the room. Are we going to get a bite at the apple?
Clark Corson, what do you think? Unicorrons and magical things happening
in the
1500?
Well, I don't know much about unicorns, but I think what I'd like to do is, I agree with Mark Garrity essentially on this. There's a lot about that property that we don't know. 1,500 acres is a nice chunk of land. I understand that eco-activists would like to keep it for natural open space, but that isn't going to serve my purpose for running, which is to minimize the onerous property tax that are facing people in our town. Our property taxes increased 7% this year alone. It's just totally unacceptable. So I think something such as Pine Hills East might be a viable option, whereby you have empty nest syndrome housing. You don't impact the education structure, and you're guaranteed two-thirds remain open space, and a guaranteed property tax a benefit to the town. Not that everything has to depend on property taxes, but it's worked well in Pine Hills. Thank you.
Thank you. Betty Kovalka, you've had a little bit of time to think about those 1,500 acres. What do you think?
I've had 30 years to think about those 1,500 acres. I just can't see, like, industrial other than where the industrial part of it is right now. It's a beautiful location. As an employee, I have walked through there and with my family, and it's the Pine Hills. And I have to agree with Mark. We don't know what's there. It's the Pine Hills. Hills. There's lots of hills. So I could see that as our boosting up our ecotourism. I'd like to see it stay as open space. I would not like to see any industrial building up in that area. Residential, you'd have to see a plan. It's very hard to say, oh, yeah, this is a good idea. We should do that. Until we see a plan, we really have to, you know, we really have to revisit everything. But I do know that it is that two-year thing away. We cannot wait 2 years to make decisions to bring in new revenue into this town. We have to work now.
Okay, thank you. You're listening to 95.9 FM in Marshfield, the South Shore's news and information station. This is a political forum. The race is for Plymouth Selectmen. There are six candidates. Four are here tonight. Clark Corson, John Mahoney, Mark Garrett, Betty Kovalka, Craig Brenner. It was a no-show tonight, even though he said he would be here. Paul McAuliffe had a planning board meeting, and we knew ahead of time that he would not be here. We're going to take a quick commercial break and come back. We'll be back right after this.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
Peter, it was always Tiny's intention to have a Tiny and Sons business.
That's true, that's true. We always worked well together. But my mom had a lot to do with it. I think she wanted us out of the house. She really needed her peace and quiet.
Five kids, you really can't blame her.
Tiny taught us how to get along and work together. And most important, Mother knows best.
Did you learn anything about windshields?
That too, but you really get used to doing a good job. You know Tiny's gonna check it out.
My boys do a good job.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9watd.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
But I am Christine James, your moderator. I'm sitting next to Kevin Tachi here in studio. It's a political forum here tonight. We've kind of hijacked your show a little bit. Thank you very much, Kevin. The races for selectmen, as we told you, in the town of Plymouth that we went to right before we went to break. And I'm sitting here with Kevin, Bobby Clark, our Plymouth correspondent, Charles Mathewson, another WATD reporter. And we're asking the candidates questions about this race. Kevin, I believe it was your turn to ask a question to the candidates.
I want to stick with the finances. This has become like a popular question in regards to taxation. Does the Proposition 2.5 statute need to be modified to better serve a municipality like Plymouth? And should there be some kind of a sliding scale? You know, it's usually the folks who are on fixed incomes who struggle when it comes time for a Prop 2.5 override to do certain capital projects or to fund education. Think about that when you answer. Should Prop 2.5 be modified? If so, how? And how should it help those who are, you know, on fixed incomes?
Who do you want to start with?
Oh, John.
Okay.
And with respect to Kevin, forgive me, with respect to Plymouth, Kevin, no, I disagree. Once again, you can take taxes up every year with the 2.5% underneath the Proposition 2.5, which was passed in 1981, and your new growth. We've never had to go for an override. We went for a voluntary override in 2005, $199 million, but that was for two new high schools and a senior center. Other than that, you don't see the issues in Plymouth with respect to revenue that you see in some of these other communities because they've hit build-out. They're north of 95% build-out, the Pembrokes, the Marshfields, the Hanovers, okay? And occasionally, they don't have that new growth going in, and they want to maintain services, and they go back to the ballot to do that. So with respect to your question, I don't know. It's going to have to have been over 20 years in Plymouth, but we just don't have those problems there.
Okay. Clark?
Yes. I agree. I essentially agree with John Mahoney on this issue. Plymouth can easily live with 2.5 prop if it disciplines itself not to spend wastefully. Again, and I'm consistent in this, axe the tax means don't spend wantonly. You have wish lists, you have needs. If we address our needs, we're going to be perfectly fine. But you have to cut out the Christmas tree. Thank you.
No Christmas tree. Not for budgets.
Okay. Betty?
By plenty of paper towels.
And toilet paper.
Free.
No, on 2.5. And just so folks know, and I think a lot of people don't know this, for folks that are 65 years of age that struggle to pay their property taxes, we have a bylaw on the books that prefers, that lets them not pay them. And they can pay either part of them or, defer as much as they want. And what happens at the end, it goes to the estate or if they sell the home. So if people are really struggling that bad for their taxes, they really should look into this 41A bylaw because it will help the people on fixed incomes and things like that.
Is it just a deferment, or is there also community service tied to it as well?
No, this is a deferment. This is the community service, I think, is something different, and that was like up to $500. But this bylaw is complete deferment of all or part of their taxes.
Okay. Mark?
Last, everybody has basically said it. No, I think Plymouth functions fine and under 2.5. We have not gone for overrides. We are a community that has a lot of growth potential, so our tax base should be able to handle the necessities and, on occasion, some wish list things.
Okay. Bobby Clark, questions for the candidates.
Yes, this is a question for all the candidates. Do you believe it's okay for town employees to be town meeting members? Please explain.
And who would you like to start with?
I would like to start with you.
Thank you.
No, I don't. I think it is a brutal conflict of interest. And if you talk to people who are disenfranchised with the budget process, the lack of communication, accountability, and transparency in the town of Plymouth, most of them will tell you that they think it's a conflict of interest. I don't think a town employee should be in a position to pass judgment on what his or her salary indirectly is going to be as a process of the budget. I don't think it's right, and I would vote against that in a heartbeat. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Clark Corson. Now let's ask the same question, John Mahoney.
Bobby, I think you asked a question earlier about the speed at which the budget was passed at town meeting, and that's because there is so much information out there nowadays. I remember 30 years ago at town meeting, you went, nobody had the data ahead of time, there was actual debate on the town meeting floor. The dissemination of information in today's world is just off the charts, and these people are so educated when they walk through the door, it's not funny. The town of Plymouth has put together a template for now how not to handle a revenue stream, and that's from the nuclear power plant, and that's in the Milky Way galaxy. They put together a template for how not to construct a new high school, and that was in the late 80s in the South High School project. I think too often these individuals are blamed for the fiscal woes of the community. These are self-inflicted decisions that the leadership, especially the political leaders, have made. The state has weighed in and said, there's no problem with these individuals being town meeting members, and I don't have a problem with it.
Betty Cavaco, same question.
And I have close to the same answer. I don't have a problem with employees being town meeting members. As a town meeting member, especially as an employee, they are guided by the Ethics Commission, and they do not vote on their raises. That is an ethical violation, and I have never witnessed any employee doing so. And as someone who is related to a town employee and being on the finance committee, I have also abstained from voting on anything that would benefit my household financially.
Same question, Mark Garrett.
Bobby, it's a tough question because in a town of 60,000 people, we probably have 300 people who are involved. And those 300 people are people who have access, who are involved in employment at various levels, whether they're municipal employees or professionals or what have you. At its base, no, I don't think a public employee should be a town meeting member. But I also question those who would be involved in zoning questions, who may be involved in zoning. I would question those permit issuing authorities. I sat on the planning board. Planning board, school committee, board of selectmen cannot sit on town meeting. However, there are other permit issuing authorities who can, and I think that's wrong because they are interpreting law. They shouldn't be making law.
Good. Any follow-up questions, Bobby?
No, thank you very much. It's very interesting, the various opinions here, and it is a very controversial issue, and there's on many levels. So your input is interesting for the town of Plymouth.
Okay. Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates?
For all of you, Vinny DiMacedo, a state senator, promises to bring his proposal for a reconsideration of retail marijuana sales through a ballot question, he promises to bring that reconsideration back to the new board after the election. How will you vote? Should voters have a say in retail sales or not? Let's start with you, Betty Cavaco.
Well, I have to say that originally I did not support recreational marijuana. As a mother of two and the president of a youth foundation, I had some issues with it. But moving forward, I believe the people have already spoken, and there's really no need to bring it back to the table. So as a selectman, it's our job to be the voice of the people, and that's what we need to get back to. So.
Okay. Same question. Mark Garrett?
Again, for the record, in the spirit of full disclosure, I did not support the state initiative either. However, I take a slightly different view. I can appreciate the people who were on the side that won, not wanting this to come back to vote. But this is a home rule state, and communities are given the right to revisit issues. That's the politics of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Commonwealth, okay? Home rule may, I believe, trumps this. And if the folks that feel that they've already won, and I'm not necessarily supporting home rule, but that's the game on the table. Those are the rules we play by. But if the folks feel that they won once, why should they have to do it again? It's a home rule state. Go out and vote and win it again. People's choice.
John Mahoney, you voted against Vinny's proposal as a selectman.
Sure, that's correct, Charlie. And is he bringing the $40,000 in to pay for the special election also? Or do you not know that yet?
Of his own money from the filling station.
Okay,
isn't that true?
That's great.
Oh, maybe it's not.
Charlie, it passed across the state. It passed in Plymouth, 52-48. Over 30,000 people voted. Okay, and we didn't put the ballot initiative on for May 20th. As we speak, town staff is working on zoning. So we're being assured by town staff that we still have control over this thing. October town meeting, you're going to look at some zoning overlay districts, obviously emanating from the industrial parks. Hopefully we get that passed at town meeting in October, and then you're going to come back in the spring of 18 for how many you want. And at this stage of the game, I have no problem with 2-4. But, I mean, he's going to come back and say, you know, revisit this question and have a special election in the fall. Whether or not the election costs us zero or $40,000, I won't support it.
Clark Corson.
Thank you. I would have voted opposite that of John Mahoney and put it on the ballot. To Mark's point, it is the Commonwealth. We have a right to revisit anything as many times as we want. That doesn't express my opinion on marijuana, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. But I want the town of Plymouth to decide where, when, and if any recreational marijuana should be sold within its town limits, not Beacon Hill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any follow-up questions of that?
Well, sure. There are so many. How about 2%? There are two sides of this. Do you each think that 2% is sufficient? And if it's not, would you raise the tax on alcohol sales? Let's go in reverse order. Clark.
Okay. So first of all, since the repeal of prohibition, alcohol is a legal drug in this country. Marijuana is not. It is still banned at the federal level. As far as 2% gross sale revenue to Plymouth, that is negligible. If you sold $2 million worth of marijuana, that would be approximately $20,000. That just doesn't flush with me. Thank you.
John?
I wouldn't increase the alcohol tax, Charlie, but certainly the 2% is insufficient. You've got to come, you know, a little bit north of that. I don't know what the number is. Certainly you don't want to go into the, the 30% range like Colorado and I believe Washington, but there's potential there for an increase without driving these people back down into the underground. Yeah.
Mark?
Charlie, I would say maximize the tax to the greatest extent possible within the legal thresholds that we have. If these things are going to be here, then let's maximize what we can get out of them. And as far as the alcohol goes, alcohol is alcohol. I mean, we could that's a whole separate debate. And it's in place. I don't think we should be touching that. I think they're two separate questions, even though there is a commonality between the two.
Betty?
Yes, I would go after the alcohol tax either, but 2% is definitely insufficient for what we what our needs are, and whatever the maximum amount that we can tax it is what we should do, and also make sure that, you know, it's in a safe place for everyone.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, I want to switch topics here briefly. I want to talk about county government, and my question is basically three parts. I'm going to give you a minute 30 on this question because
I'm shocked. Christine, you want to talk about county government?
Yes, I do.
I'm shocked.
There you go. Well, be shocked some more. Plymouth County government, number one, do you support it or not? Two, specifically, what does it provide to Plymouth? And three, would you support the pay raise or reinstatement, as the commissioners call it, from $15,000 to $28,000? Let's start with you, John Mahoney. You have a minute 30 to answer those three questions.
Well, Christine, we could write a book on this one. So do I support Plymouth County government? No. I think it's time for it to go the way of the dodo. Let's take those jobs and move those underneath the state umbrella, okay? The best part about county government is registry of deeds. It's sustainable. It's a cash cow. Number two, what do they do for the town of Plymouth other than suing us unnecessarily? You'd have to explain that to me, Christine. I can't figure it out. We're currently in the discovery phase of a lawsuit, which they are suing us over the South Street Transfer Station. The similar lawsuit was kicked out by the judge when they sued the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection. And currently they are supposed to be monitoring their portion of the South Street Transfer Station, which still has the solid waste underneath it, which is emanating methane. They're not doing that. So Plymouth pays a bill. We get nothing out of it. We have difficulty getting these people to the table. They're completely nonsensical. They don't listen, and there's no engagement. Third thing, the raise. Once again, they're not in the position of county commissioner. They stand on the outside and say that position should go from $28,000 down to $75,000. They then get elected. And 4 months after getting sworn into a four-year term, say, we need more money. They go to $15,000. Didn't surprise me. It surprised me 4 years ago. This time didn't. They come back. Once again, two of the three get elected again. We need to go back to $28,000. You've had 25 jobs gone in the Registry of Deeds the last 5 years.
Your time's up. Thank you very much. Same question, Betty Cavaco. It's a three-part. Plymouth County government, do you support it or not? Two, what specifically does it provide to the town of Plymouth? And do you support the pay raise or reinstatement, as the commissioners call it, from $15,000 to $28,000? A minute 30.
Well, I don't really think it does any good. And speaking of redundancy, I think the Plymouth County and the way our town and state operates, there's redundancy there. The Registry of Deeds, you know, I think it's something that we could bring under us. And honestly, the pay raise, like John said, I don't agree with that. That was a little far left for me. So I don't even need a minute and 30 seconds.
Okay. Mark Garrett, what do you think about that? Would you like me to repeat the three parts of the question?
I have it jotted down. I'll take the easy ones first. Current county government really doesn't benefit Plymouth. Pay raises, I don't know what they do. I don't grant pay raises to employees unless there's a performance. Okay. Having said all that, I come from a different part of the country. I come from the New York City area, specifically New Jersey. Both New Jersey and New York State have very powerful county governments. And county governments work very well in regional services. For example, in New Jersey, the county government runs the park system. The county government runs major infrastructure. If you ever go down to New Jersey, you see those funky little highway signs. They're blue and gold, and they have 500 series numbers on them. Those are county roads. The towns don't worry about them. The state doesn't worry about them. The counties worry about them. And it's a really good local network of roads that are well kept and very well operated. When you go to New York State, you go to specifically Long Island, Suffolk County and Nassau County, we talk about streamlining permits. That's where you get your permits. Yes, they're bureaucratic, I get that, but they are centralized and they speak to the needs of their counties. Right now, we've got, I forget how many counties in the Commonwealth, but each of them do something different. You have legislatures on the Vineyard and Barnstable, nowhere else. So I support county government if it's implemented correctly.
Okay, same question, Clerk Corson.
Well, I'm the tax guy, I don't support any of it. I was at the Board of Selectmen meeting when the two gentlemen from the county government made their proposal, and John, I have to congratulate you on your cross-examination that night. You put them in their proper place. Imagine a county government guy saying that he wants to cut his salary, get in there, and then increase it 3-4 months later. Come on. So county government has gone the way of the past. I'm death against county government. Would I make it a penchant? No. But would I be in favor of it? No. And do I support it? No. And do I support the increases that the commissioners gave themselves? No again.
Thank you very much. That was Clark Corson. Now we're going to go back.
Christine,
yes. Yes.
I just want to say that I was joking earlier about you're asking about the county, because we ask this question of every group of selectmen. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time we've had really intelligent answers to the question.
Okay.
Very good. We all get an A.
Thank you. And a holiday sticker. And by the way, this forum that you're listening to, this is the race for Plymouth Selectmen. You're listening to 95.9 FM, WATD. Kevin Tachi, question for the candidates.
I guess I want to know what your specific proposal would be to stimulate economic development. Every community wants to make sure that their economic development is on the right track. What would you do to stimulate it specifically in lieu of maybe the tax rate or lessen the burden on taxpayers?
Mark Corson.
Thank you very much. Just as Carver and Plimpton has done, we have to incentivize industry to come to us. And you can do that by forgiving them on taxes for a few years, anything to get their foot in. You have to have a pad available for them to get in. The Zoning Board of Adjustment has to take a smart pill and increase the height of buildings. So instead of going this way, you go this way. In order for our taxes to go down, in the spirit of consistency, you have to spread the revenue tax base. And you can do that by pulling people in, specifically incentivize them to come to Plymouth, go up with your building, don't have this 35 height restriction, which is nonsensical at best, and Plymouth, come into the 21st century, please.
Hey, that was Clark Corson. Let's go to John Mahoney.
So, Kevin, I take exception to the question a little, because the assumption or perception in that question is that we don't do a good job with economic development now. We do. We just had a top-to-bottom evaluation from Northeastern. The presentation came out. The individual said we were an A-. I questioned him on that. He said B+. Two criticisms.
But you can always do better, can't you?
You can always do better.
All right.
At the end of the day, Kevin, doesn't matter what you bring in for revenue. If you continue to believe that if 100% of all new growth goes into the general fund, all you're doing is creating higher residential property taxes and more debt. It doesn't work. The entire monetary system doesn't work. Right. Two criticisms. One was infrastructure. We heard that repeated earlier today. We don't do roads and we don't do water. We don't do either one. We have $135 million of debt for roads. I go to Chamber of Commerce meetings. We don't have enough wells. So you can't have businesses come to town, look them in the eye and say, we're not going to provide you with roads or water. It's not going to fly. So we've got to rectify that.
Mark Garrett?
Yep. Couple of facts. Plymouth, 78.53% residentially zoned. State Forest, 15.86% of the land area. Other non-residential, which includes all industrials and commercials, 5.61. Folks, we're a residential community, and we've got to accept that and stop denying it. Now, we can work towards improving the ratio a little bit, but we're not going to change a lot of things. We're not going to go to 50-40 on residential to industrial commercial. That's not going to happen. What we need to do is the town of Plymouth needs to step up, A, partner with industries ahead of the time. 1,500 acres, we don't have to wait for somebody to come in and decide who's going to have that piece of land. We should be talking with companies right now, partnering and putting out zoning proposals before the drop-dead time.
Thank you. Betty Cavaco?
Well, we definitely have to maximize our industrial parks. We have, I stated this at one of the last debates, we have 70 acres in the industrial park. We have 120 acres in Colony Place. I want to see the bylaw back on fall town meeting for this fall town meeting to raise the height restriction to 75 feet. It almost passed the last time. It only lost by 4 votes. Those people, the 4 votes, are already wavering to the other side. We have to maximize our industrial areas before we start building anything else. Because, again, we have these places. They're not full to capacity. We have to streamline our process, make it easy for people to come in here, because trying to come in as a business is a nightmare for folks, and that's what we have to do.
Okay. If I can follow up on that real quick. So you're basically saying that there's a problem with the permitting process. Mm-hmm. What would you do to streamline it?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is figure out what exactly everybody has to do. I was just talking to a business that's trying to expand, and they said, you know, it would be nice if we had one checklist and I didn't have to keep going back 3 or 4 times to figure out what next I have to do. I mean, I would love to see the whole system computerized. Let's get into the 21st century. I know I've gone to different town halls in Marshfield, Pembroke. I mean, very easy process. You go in, they give you a checklist, you walk out, you get what you need, you come back, and there you go. It's not like that in Plymouth, and it needs to be.
We'll go back around. Do you agree that this issue with the permitting process and it needs to be streamlined? If so,
permitting process should be streamlined, but that's not a panacea. The state permitting process is incredibly complex, even before they get to us. Okay? When they get to us, we have professional, elected, and appointed committees. Many of them overlap in jurisdiction. I think there's an ability to streamline some of that. But, you know, permitting is supposed to be arduous. Permitting is not supposed to be, come on in. What I'm talking about is being proactive. Pre-zone a portion of the town before you have an entity that wants to come in and say, I want that 120 acres. The town should take on that responsibility. If we want to lessen the tax burden, we need to rezone. The Industrial Lands Committee report said that. The Industrial Lands Committee report was the nexus for the relaxing the 30-foot height requirement. This stuff is written down. We've got to use it and follow it. That report was endorsed townwide.
John, same question.
So basically, two criticisms from the Northeastern report, Kevin.
First one, you don't do infrastructure adequately enough, roads and water. The second critique was the permitting process. So once again, I'm going to warn you, you're feeding into the perception that if we streamline the permitting process, somehow taxes will go down. They won't. The revenue is only as good as what you do with it. Now, having said that, the town manager, we just got this report a few months ago, the town manager is currently looking at ways to, you know, a little bit of consolidation instead of, you know, lawyers and engineers, you know, with a proposal going out to, you know, 5 different boards, can we condense that down to 2 or 3 and stuff like that.
Clark? A little bit of what everybody said I agree with. You have to eliminate the redundant appearances before boards and then have to go back for a comma or a sentence or dot an I across a T. Planning boards, as an example, approve developers' plans. They don't have a master plan for the town. That's not the function of a planning board. So your zoning board of appeals, have inordinate responsibility. Rezone in advance, I agree with Mark perfectly. Create a pad. Create a ready zoned environment. So companies wanting to come into Plymouth don't have to jump through unnecessary hoops. Make it good for them. Attract them that way.
Okay. Bobby Clark, questions?
Yes, I do have a question. John, you touched on the water supply. So I'd like to ask a question about the water supply. And we can begin with Betty. What is your long-range plan for protecting the town's water supply and guaranteeing that we continue to have an adequate water supply?
You asking me?
No, oh, Betty.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I just thought I'd begin on this side of the table.
Oh, no problem. I'm sorry, I thought you were talking to John and I didn't
what
pick it up.
Your long-range plan for protecting the town's water supply and guaranteeing that we have an adequate water supply?
Well, you know, one of the things that came to the advisory and finance committee is our DPW director wants new wells. But those new wells are upwards of $40 million. And one of the things that I've thought of is that we have a lot of development that goes on in town. And I think it's time that we hold those developers responsible for all the infrastructure that goes along with each development. So, meaning that if someone's going to build houses and they're going to have families in there, there's going to be a certain amount of money that this developer is going to have to pay to educate these children that are going to be there. If they need a new well, they need to buy into that. So, all these development that are going on isn't just development, see you later, goodbye, and then the rest of the burden is on the taxpayer. So I know we need to take a look at this well situation, and I know it's a big amount of money, but we have to do something because we have the best aquifer in the state. So we need to keep it that way.
Mark.
I differ a little bit with Betty on this. What she's describing is linkage, and linkage is illegal in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. You can't have developers pay for things. It would be nice, but it's illegal in the Commonwealth. Now to Bobby's question. The way you protect the aquifer is if you pre-zone areas for industrial use, get your wells away from them. Our most productive well is the North Plymouth Well. It happens to be in the middle of an industrial park. We have wells along Long Pond Road. Happens to be right near Exit 5. Back in the day, for access ease, they put wells near where the business centers were. They needed water, so it was all very convenient. Well, we've advanced beyond that. We have some wells out in the hinterlands, but you have to protect your wells, and you have to put protective zones around them, zone 2s, zone 1s, zone 3s. You have to look at those.
John.
T-Boone Pickens is a Oklahoma billionaire who owns tens of thousands of acres in Texas, and he owns the land and he owns the water rights under the land, and he sells it back to the taxpayers of Texas. You mitigate risk in your system, you build redundancy, you buy land. Brockton is a train wreck. $7 million a year in their budgetary process for a desalinization plant where they take no water from. They have been abusing Silver Lake for over a century, and then they degrade multiple other watersheds, diverting water over to Silver Lake so we go to Brockton because they probably don't proactively invest in infrastructure. You have 14,000 customers in a self-sustaining enterprise fund water. It's one of the cheapest, most inexpensive, one of the top 10 inexpensive water systems in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts with no general fund subsidy. There are two wells in Cedarville. We bought 380 acres, encompassing all of the Zone 2 a few years ago at town meeting for $3 million with CPA money. We walked in with cash on the barrel head and walked away. Those two wells are protected in perpetuity.
Clark Corson.
I must say, John enjoys a tremendous advantage being on the present Board of Selectmen. I'm not aware of all the details that he gives, but I will say in general, I'd be very cautious about contamination of our aquifer. So location of industrial parks close to it, the half-life of sulfites and so forth, and I'll be before another wildland trust organization debate on Saturday morning. Judicial use of water that's available. Stop washing cars speciously, and enforce water restrictions. So I would take it the other way. Thanks.
But as Betty said, what was the figure, Betty, that the DPW director gave when he came to the Finance Committee?
Over $40 million for new wells.
For two wells, and the DPW director is saying we need wells. We absolutely need these. This is not some frivolous thing. So you're for cutting taxes. You're for minimal spending on budgets. What would you say about the water supply and the budget and funding the water supply?
The town just put a new water main on Taylor Avenue, and the users pay for that. It doesn't come out of the property taxes of the population as a whole. In Plymouth, people that get advantages of municipal services are going to have to pay for those. That's my answer.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other follow-ups for that?
No, that will be fine.
Okay.
That's a statement in itself.
Charlie, Mr. Mathewson, questions for the candidates.
We have two large affordable rental apartment projects underway now in town at Cordage and what they're calling Copper Cove, ironic name. Leaving the 40B mess aside, are these two projects sufficient to supply workforce housing, or do we need more?
Who do you want to start with?
Let's start with Clark. We'll go around the situation.
I have no idea, Charlie. I understand the argument for affordable housing as a requirement. It's a prerequisite. It's mandated by the Commonwealth through a certain percentage, but I don't know whether or not the affordable housing units that those two complexes are going to provide is going to be adequate. I have no idea.
John?
I'll try to stop going off on the 40B tangent, but obviously
that's
one of the... One of the questions with Cordis, Charlie, is how many children are going to come out of that development and go across the street to Hedge School Elementary. Mm-hmm. Okay, now having said that, the 40B is onerous. I have a problem with numerous things, especially the fact, one of the facts is that if you live in a mobile home, that doesn't qualify as affordable housing. Okay,
yeah, yeah.
So you get on to 495. If that counted, a lot of these communities...
Forget 40B. We know. It's a mess. It's ridiculous.
Okay. Is that going to solve the problem? I think we need to, once again, when you come to making a commitment to infrastructure, it is quality out of the box, because it's too often we got two projects going on in town right now that we're redoing, and it shouldn't have happened. You look at the Mount Pleasant School, you get 111 years out of it for $19,000, and that thing could still withhold a Sherman tank. So on multiple levels, if you start changing your behavior, you can dramatically slow the growth of residential property taxes and make it all more affordable for everyone in the community.
Thank you.
Mark Garrett, affordable housing.
If we're leaving the 40B question off the table, I think that we're then limiting ourselves to the inclusionary bylaw. And the inclusionary bylaw is nice, it's helpful, but it's not going to solve the problem, because there are a very limited number of units that are required to go into these larger developments. So I think we have to continue to look for ways of doing affordable housing. And staying away from 40B, I said this last week and I'll say it again, we should define what affordable housing is and not constantly rely on the state definition, because the state definition stinks, okay? And for some, their definition isn't even affordable, and a lot of the folks who need affordable housing don't qualify. But beyond that, I think we should be working on a local program to incentivize affordable housing units. To continue to incentivize them, I should say.
You were very polite. Betty?
Well, I'm not sure if that's going to help the situation. Affordable housing, I mean, what's affordable and to whom? I mean, we have so many minimum wage paying jobs. I think bringing in better paying jobs for the residents, affordable housing wouldn't be as much of an issue as it is. But, you know, do we have enough? Obviously, we don't. How are we going to get some more? There really isn't a big plan in the pipeline that anybody knows about. So, you know, affordable housing, it's a good thing, but I think we need to bring in better paying jobs for folks that they can afford even the affordable housing, because minimum wage jobs, they still can't afford affordable housing.
Thank you.
Okay. This is from one of our listeners who sent this in. We had a number of people that sent questions in for the candidates, and this is Anne from Plymouth who wrote, "My concern is pensions. I'd like to know who in the town receives pensions besides teachers, police, and fire, and is our town pension system fully funded? What do each of the candidates think about what should be done to keep these plans solvent?" Let's start with you, Mark Garrett.
Not being involved in that portion of the government, I can't tell you who gets pensions. I mean, my understanding is anybody who goes through the collective bargaining process and any of the supervisory unions probably have a pension program available to them. So that's a fair number of people. I mean, I think there's the number that's always been bandied about is about 2,000 public employees. So I'm guessing that that's the number who's on pensions. What was the second part of the question?
The second part of the question is, is the town pension system fully funded, and what do each of the candidates think should be done to keep these plans solvent?
If we've made promises to people, we have to fund that. I mean, that's going to cost us money, but we made those promises. And unless there's a reason to revisit them, and the only reason I can think of is some sort of crisis, an economic crisis, I think we have to stay and recognize our commitments.
Okay. Same question, John Mahoney.
Sure. So up until 1988, all these towns in Massachusetts and cities, pretty much 99% of them, they were in a pay-as-you-go mode with respect to pensions. The standard bearer who broke the mold was Wellesley, I believe, in 1973, where they started to set money aside and create an account which would kick out a revenue stream which would cover the pensions. Massachusetts mandated in 88 that all these communities had to have that fully funded by 2040. Tom Kelly oversees our retirement board up in the Cordage Park. They are as conservative as it comes. I attended a meeting a week ago Friday morning. They are tied in and take advice from the professionals down in New York, from your finance director. We currently are at about $170 million in that account. Okay, 80% of the contribution annually is going for the people in the system from prior to when we started handling money this way. They are very aggressive. They are conservative. They are disciplined. We should have it paid off in about 2032.
Okay, we're out of time there. Betty Cavaco, same question.
And I was actually going to bring up the same thing that John had. 2032, that will be fully funded. I think the Retirement Advisory Board with Mr. Kelly and our own Lynn Barrett, they have really come up with some very aggressive steps to fund this. And I think, I think we're doing a pretty good job considering other municipalities that were moving forward aggressively. So,
roughly, do you have a rough number about how many people in town receive pensions?
Well, the retirees, I think it's about 1,200.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not positive on that number, but I think it's about 1,200.
Okay.
So.
I'm not sure on that either, Christine, but we can get that to you.
Okay, thank you. Clark Corson, same question.
I'm pretty certain that Melissa Riggi, the town manager, with whom I've met three or four times, has assured me that there are about 1,700 public employees, which include school, and only 18 of them are not in collective bargaining. I've heard the mention 2,000, whatever, we should be fully funded. My question is, what do we do in the meantime? What do we do in the meantime? I calculate $593 million that we're going to owe before it's over, as mandated by Massachusetts, which has given us a deadline. And I really don't know where that money's coming from, and it's a serious issue. Thank you.
What was this?
Let's try to be a little bit more upbeat with this next question, okay?
Town's going to celebrate its 400th birthday, less than 3 years. What's your opinion on the plans to celebrate this milestone? Let's start with Betty.
Well, I'd like to be more upbeat about this, but we don't have the money to do it. And the Commonwealth hasn't come up with a lot of money for us to do this big undertaking. We don't have the infrastructure in place to do it. So my thought is I don't think any of the taxpayers should be paying for all of this celebration. I agree we need to have a celebration. It's something big for our town. It's going to bring in a lot of revenue. But how do we get there? And I think that is something that aggressively has to be done by our boards that we've put in place, Destination Plymouth or people like that, because we don't have enough money right now, and I don't foresee enough money within this 3 years to put on the type of celebration that we want.
Clark.
Thank you. I made a comment at the last public debate last week that I would advocate a 25-cent surcharge on the meals tax as a way of paying for that. In 3 years, when it comes due, I really have no idea, but I don't think people are not going to have a five-star meal at one of Plymouth's 75 restaurants because they're going to pay a quarter more.
Wait, the axe the tax guy is
going to... That's right. Okay. That's right. And I
just want to make sure I got that clear.
No, that's right. Axe the property tax. Okay. But you can't stop government from functioning. So I think a viable way of doing that, which is a way they paid for Town Hall, which I'm totally in favor of, that was 75 cents on the meals tax, a way of funding 2020 would be to do that. Internationally, the world is looking at Plymouth. We're not Jamestown, Virginia. I hope that DiMacedo and Muratori do something constructive to make the Commonwealth realize that Plymouth is really bigger than Plymouth. Thanks.
I agree with Mr. Corson. I wish those two would stop failing the community. I'm kidding. All right, having said that, it's a $40 billion-plus business. We're going to put on an event here that only correlates to the level of investment we predominantly get from the feds, the private sector, and the state. I'm fascinated that 6 to 8 years into this thing, we've only received $700,000 in change from the state. We put in the application, you know, we wanted 500 grand this year. It's been knocked down to 50. And now your state delegation has to go to work. You know, they've got all sorts of stumbling blocks up there. I can't understand how Jamestown, Virginia had a $30 million budget in 2007, and we're staring here at 700 grand. You don't want any of these streets open beyond 4th of July 2019. After that, it's about putting on a coat of fresh paint, you know, mowing the lawn and, you know, sweeping the streets. So, I can't, you know, once again, I just can't fathom the lack of investment from the state, and I just believe that they have the money.
Okay. What about Mr. Corson's idea, John? Do you like his idea as far as a meals tax in order to fund it?
Listen, you're gonna hear me say this again ad nauseum. The general fund doesn't work. The standard was set 6 to 7 years ago by the town of Plimpton. They wouldn't allow 100% of Cisco to go into the general fund. They created an infrastructure fund. 35% is now going to pay for their police station. I think the best thing the town of Plymouth has done is enact a meals tax to invest in that new town hall, the entire thing. So something like that I have no problem looking at. As long as the key to the whole thing, you don't create any new additional tax if it's going into the general fund. Mm-hmm. That's where the discussion begins and ends.
Mark?
I think my concern, the 400th is a national and an international celebration of immigration. I know immigration is not the topic you want to be talking about right now, but I'm not afraid to talk about it. I mean, the Pilgrims were the first of the immigrants to come here, and there's been a long line since. So it is a national celebration. I think that the thing that concerns me is that we haven't decided what we want that celebration to be. We've used big words, but we haven't decided what we want it to be. And if it's a national celebration, I don't know that we have a media partner yet. Just like Sail Boston has a media partner, Channel 5, where you have a media partner participating actively in marketing this and promoting this. And we haven't sought out really, or we haven't received any large corporate donations from large regional corporations beyond what's in our industrial park, the regionals.
On board with Mr. Corson's idea for a meals tax?
I mean, I have no problem with adding to the meal tax, but I mean, I think there are other things we should be doing to raise revenue. To fall back on that constantly, we get into that habit all the time. Okay, it's a good idea, and it may be an option down the road. I'm not against it. However, I'd like to be seeing us doing more proactive things to raise money than to just go back and say, okay, we'll add another quarter onto it. Okay.
And just to quickly be fair, would you be on board with Mr. Corson's idea for the meals tax? I just wanted to make sure I asked everybody.
So. Yes and no. I actually agree with Mark, and there are other things that we should be doing. But worst-case scenario, sure.
All right. I want to go to our lightning round now, and this is where we ask the questions of the candidates. The answers are either one or two sentences, and the reporter will say what kind of an answer they want, either yes or no, or one or two sentences tops. Bobby Clark, lightning round question for the candidates.
Do you support town meeting's action to restrict ground-mounted solar arrays in residential neighborhoods to 5 acres rather than 15 acres?
Two sentences? Okay, let's start with Clark Corson.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'd like to see it 2 acres. And I would also like to see about a 500-yard buffer between that and any existing residential. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
That was John Mahoney. Mark Garrett? Two sentences.
The current bylaw deals with commercial uses and restricts them. I don't think we need another bylaw.
Okay. Same question. Betty Cavallo?
Yes.
Okay. Charles Mathewson, lightning round question.
In the same order, who do you support for planning board, Kevin Joyce or Malcolm McGregor? Mr. Corson.
I don't know either gentleman. I know Kevin Joyce and I've met Malcolm McGregor. I don't know who would be best for that position. One is advocating his experience.
Two sentences.
Give me a name.
Pass. Two talented individuals, Charlie. Inappropriate question.
No, it's not an inappropriate question. I just want to make my one little point here. I say this all the time when people say that. The thing that's great about radio, we get to ask you guys anything we want, and I think we're pretty reasonable, because we get to hear how you answer or don't answer a question. And sometimes that's more telling than anything, because as I'll say again to every board, you spend our money, you make decisions that affect our lives, and I think these questions are fair. Let's move on to Mark Garrett.
Malcolm McGregor.
Okay.
Betty?
Malcolm McGregor. I have a real issue with a spouse of a selectman planning things forward
two sentences.
To vote on.
Okay.
Just to make sure we're clear, for or against the town allowing the sale of recreational marijuana?
Two sentences?
Yes.
Or yes or no?
Nope, either or.
Okay, let's start this side. Betty?
Voters already voted, so yes.
Okay. Mark Garrett?
No, but I would support whatever the voters choose to vote for.
John Mahoney?
2 to 4 locations in the industrial parks.
Okay. Clark Corson?
No or yes, depending if it went back to a referendum.
Okay, quick question here. Board of Selectmen or Select Board? Which do you prefer? Betty Cavaco?
Board of Selectmen.
Okay, Mark Garrett. Board of Selectmen
Select
or Select Board.
Board?
Okay, John Mahoney?
Board of Selectmen.
Okay.
Board of Selectmen.
Okay. Bobby Clark?
Should only ratepayers pay the sewer repair costs?
Two sentences? Okay, let's start with you, Mark Garrett.
Absolutely no.
Okay. John Mahoney? Two sentences.
I'll touch on that in my finishing statement, but there's a lot more information to come out on this.
Okay. Clark Corson, two sentences.
Absolutely yes. If you use it, you pay for it.
Okay. Betty Cavaco?
I don't think either should pay for it. I think we need to find other revenue streams to do so.
Okay. And one more lightning round question, Charles Mathewson.
Do you personally contribute to the town's meals tax, and if so, through which eating establishments?
Somebody's slipping you some gift certificates here, Charlie. Let's start with you, Betty. Here on Restaurant Review.
Alden Park, 42 North. I mean, you name it, I've been there.
Okay.
I've been here for 50 years,
okay.
So probably all of them.
Mark Garrett?
Yes, and the numerous high-end restaurants in town.
Okay. John Mahoney, where do you buy your lasagna?
Charlie, I had dinner at Dylan's a couple weeks ago with John Scagliarini.
Okay. Clark Corson.
Mamma Mia's all the way.
Okay, good. We have time for one more,
oh,
Bobby?
Oh, yes. Now, going on the basis of if you use it, you pay for it, should only people who have children in the public schools pay for the maintenance, upkeep, and staffing of the town schools?
Two sentences. Let's start with you, Clark Corson.
Of course not. Education is the most wonderful resource our country has.
Okay.
So the answer is no.
Okay, John Mahoney?
Yeah, that should be borne by, you know, everybody across the community.
Okay. Mark Garrett?
No.
Okay.
No.
Betty Kavak. All right. Let's go to closing statements now. And again, we've had the good discussion here tonight. Plymouth Selectman. We've had six candidates running. John Mahoney was here. Clark Corson was here. Betty Cavaco was here. Craig Brenner did not show up. Paul McAuliffe was not here, but we knew ahead of time, and he got a pass on that because of the planning board meeting. And, of course, Mark Garrett is here. We're going to reverse the order that we started in, and we ended last time with John Mahoney. So we're going to start with a closing statement with John Mahoney.
Thanks, Christine. Let's go right to the sewer issue. So when I first got on the Board of Selectmen, there was four enterprise funds. Three of those four were subsidized artificially from the general fund, stealing from Peter to pay Paul. I advocated for that to stop. The last time anyone who didn't participate in any of those four services artificially had their taxes going to any of them was 2012. With respect to the sewer line, you have a situation here you have a very creative, talented finance director. She's looking at every angle here. The latest thing that she's asked the state is, can she split that up into two $24 million payments? What's the interest rate? If you can come online in 2019 with the $24 million, in 2021, the initial project that came online in 2002 is completely paid for, and then can you come back on a couple of years later with the other $24 million? I will not charge, if anybody outside of that sewer area has to make a contribution to this project, they will not pay at the rate that I will, because I benefit from the service. But we need a lot more data.
Thank you very much for the end of our minute. Thank you very much, John Mahoney. Paul McAuliffe's not here. I'm going to read his final statement. Finally, I believe it is important to maintain and improve the quality of life for all Plymouth citizens. As a member of the Community Preservation Committee, I voted for the preservation of open space, funding for workforce housing, and Habitat for Humanity. Over the years as a planning board member and chair, I have negotiated with residential developers for neighborhood benefits, recreational fields, sidewalks, bus stops for students, and open space. As Plymouth continues to grow, the town needs a leader with both vision and a record of accomplishments. Please vote for Paul McAuliffe for selectman on May 20th, 2017. And again, that was a comment from Paul McAuliffe. Now let's go to Betty Cavaco, your final statement.
Thank you, Christine. As a Plymouth resident for over 50 years and a mother of two, I'm concerned about the direction our town is taking as we head into the future. That is why I'm running. We need creative problem solving and strong leadership from our selectmen. People know me as a doer, not a talker, but I am also a listener. And that is what our town government needs to return to. I will be your voice. As selectmen, I'm committed to working for all the residents of Plymouth. I am a candidate for selectmen, and I want you to know that I am focused, persistent, committed, and tenacious when needed. I will work hard for the residents of our community. If you are happy with the way things are in town government, don't vote for me. I am here to make changes. Remember, please vote on May 20th. I respectfully ask for your support. A vote for Betty Cavaco is a vote for each and every resident in Plymouth. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty Cavaco. Now let's go to Clark Corson, your final statement.
Thank you so much. There are so many issues over and above what we've discussed tonight on the social, global, economic side. You have the homeless situation, Memorial Hall, Burial Hill, drug issues, graffiti, beautification, maintenance of buildings and grounds, social media. Our website can be improved immeasurably. On the fiscal side, you have demand for services, personnel costs, an unfettered other public employee benefit program, health insurance, which is now being negotiated, form of government, timing and precious. Saturday, May 20th is election day and your chance to stop the bleeding. With your vote, I will listen, do the research, and be available 24/7. My name is Clark Corson, and with your vote, we will begin the process to axe the tax. As John said, a government which robs Peter to pay Paul will always be dependent on the support of Paul. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Clark Corson. Now let's go. Mark Garrett, final statement.
In my opening statement, I spoke of a scaled townwide program to pay off the sewer reconstruction, and that scaled program would be based on benefits received. We've heard from some candidates and some folks that the Pine Hills does not benefit from the municipal wastewater system. Today I received a report from the DPW that Pine Hills sends 27,000 cubic yards of waste sludge, the concentrated solids, to the municipal system to the plant every week. That totals 1.4 million cubic yards. My question is, how is that not a benefit in the long run? I don't understand how the ratepayers should be paying for this privilege. We need facts. We need real numbers. We need honesty and transparency. Vote. Use your vote and vote for Mark Garrett on May 20th. Thank you
very much. You've been listening to Political Forum here. The race is for Plymouth Selectman. This will be up on our website tomorrow in its entirety. You'll also hear selected cuts during morning drive. The election date is May 20th. Remember, if you don't vote, you don't have a voice. You're listening to 95.9 FM, WATD. Thank you for joining us.